topic for today is the topic of bionic eyes. And what we're dealing with when we talk about bionic eyes is really a new technology. I haven't found Chuvo's response to the deal with the issue. It's just not there. So I'm breaking down the question of may a bionic eye be used on Shabbos into the issues that I believe are relevant, but it's entirely possible I'm missing something. So what that means is if you want to use your bionic eye on Shabbos, make sure to do further research. Certainly make sure to consult Rabbi Taub, as I said in previous weeks, for any halacha lemaisa guidance. I'm not sure that it's actually going to be halacha lemaisa for anybody here. But in the event that this becomes a practical question for anybody, do address it with Rabbi Taub. And again, hopefully the sheets will be here next week. So the first question is, what in the world is a bionic eye? Right? That's our first question. Yes. Right, so we have to talk about it. The answer is yes, but we have to discuss it. There are several different versions of bionic eyes that are in development by different organizations, and they actually do slightly different things. One version of the bionic eye, and this is the one that I want to focus on. I'm sorry, it's a pun. It's not intended. But the one that I want to focus on for today is under development by Stanford University and is the one that seems most likely to actually come into use first. It's the easiest and simplest technology. It's a camera that's mounted on glasses. It's obviously a miniature camera. And it sends light to an electronic chip that's mounted on a person's retina or on his optic nerve or even a relevant portion in the brain. And that chip converts the lights to electrical signals. It'll be useful for people whose retinas are no longer functioning. The idea is it receives the signal from the camera, sends the signal to the brain, where the brain will interpret the message. That's one type, and that's the one I want to get to. However, it's worth knowing about a couple of other versions that are in development. A more futuristic approach comes from the University of Houston with the help of NASA. And what they're doing there is that they're trying to mimic the retina itself. The retina holds rods and cones, the light-detecting cells. And what they're trying to do is to create a 2-micron-thick space-age material called lead zirconium titanium oxide. And that material will actually be sensitive to light and will send signals to the brain that are similar to the signals sent by the normal retina. That's a second type that's in development. Then here's another one. This is from the University of Colorado. This is incredible. They're using quantum dots. Quantum dots are really, really tiny semiconductors, essentially, but they're acted on by light. And they'll fluoresce. They'll actually generate light when they're hit by photons, by light itself. So that received images will be brighter. It's meant to amplify just the brightness of an image. And the advantage there is that there's no power source needed. For the camera and for the cells that are attached to the retina, you need a power source. For this, you actually don't even need a power source. These materials naturally will do this. And then lastly, there's this very macabre military version that I came across in doing research on this. This is spooky. It's the one most likely to make it into a movie, I think. And that's the idea is that when you go into the military and join a certain unit, they will actually bank your eye. They'll take out the biological eye that a person has, and they'll implant this device that will have all sorts of, you know, night vision and the like. And then when you finish your service, you'll have your biological eye returned to you, complete with it has a power source that's limited to guarantee that the soldier will actually come back for his biological eye at the end and not try to run off with the military product. So, what can I tell you? It's out there. Someone's developing it. In that case, actually, DARPA, which is not really much of a surprise, the U.S. Military branch that deals with this sort of invention. Yes?
The first read that you were saying is that's in your eye instead of the retina?
Right. So the first one has a chip that can be mounted on the retina or elsewhere that will play the role that the retina plays. It doesn't have to be mounted on the retina itself. But it's going to be on the retina, on the optic nerve. It has to be somewhere along the line because the job of that chip is to receive signals and then send those signals to the brain. Now, the only way it's going to be able to do that is if it's mounted on somewhere along the line of nerves that are going to carry that signal. So yes, it's actually going to be, it's going to be on the system. So you have a power source that has to be attached to the chip, as well as to the camera, frankly, that's going to enable it to function. It has to be a really, really miniaturized battery, basically. That's what we're talking about. Incredible, but true. There's actually someone out there, he calls himself, there's another bad pun, but it's his, not mine, the Eyeborg, E-Y-E-B-O-R-G. He's a film producer, and he has invented an eye that will actually contain within it a miniature camera and a power source. And he had lost the use of one of his eyes, and so he put that in his head. So he actually does this, and he walks around filming things. So apparently the miniature power source is not an obstacle to making this happen. It all fits inside his eye socket. These are the technologies we're talking about, but really I want to talk about the first one. The one in which you have a camera mounted on glasses, and it sends a signal to a chip that's attached somewhere along the line to the optic nerve, and that chip will take the signals from the camera, transmit them to the brain. And the question is, you have somebody who can't see. You have someone who's not capable of sight. Now, suddenly, they are capable of sight through this. What happens come Shabbos? Are they allowed to continue to use this this device? So, yeah.
Does everything that you hear apply to also the last one? Optionally take out your eye and use this thing? Or is it only if you didn't have sight and you needed this?
Right. So the answer is maybe. We'll see as we go through the topics. Because you're right. Some of these, we're going to employ the principle of hefset, of loss, if you didn't make use of it. But you hear you're walking into that situation. That's true. There are a few different issues that we need to discuss here. Four, actually. Number one is use of the camera itself, what is essentially a digital video camera. And the question is, I have a digital video camera that's on when Shabbos starts. Am I allowed to walk around with it, recording whatever I see? That's number one. Number two is the question of causing images to imprint on the receiver in the retina. Is there a problem there? Number three, the issue of potentially degrading the honor of Shabbos in doing this. And we'll talk more about what that means, God willing, when we get to it. And then finally, the question of carrying something like this outside of an Eruv. Right? You have the glasses on with the camera. Would that be permitted outside of an Eruv? So we have four different issues that we need to discuss. Again, I'm sorry that we don't have the sheets. There was a mess, for those who came in late, there was a mess in terms of the printing in the office. God willing, we'll have them for part two of this topic next week. So the first issue is the issue of modifying the flow of electricity in the device as you view different things with this camera. This doesn't only apply to the odd technology of the bionic eye. What else is it going to apply to that's far more common? And I said the video camera, but, sorry? Security cameras, right? Surveillance cameras. We have them everywhere. Am I allowed to leave them running on Shabbos? It's really fundamentally the same question. And some of the discussion that we'll have here then relates back to that discussion as well. So we are assuming that this camera is left on from before Shabbos. You're not turning it on. The only question is handling it, carrying it around, taking in images on Shabbos. So here, in order to address this, sorry? Maybe. No, the answer is maybe. And we'll see that this isn't motion activated, it's motion adjusted. And you could argue that with the hearing aid it is as well. So we'll see. We're going to borrow some tshuvos from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach regarding hearing aids and apply them here as well. So you're right. There's carryover between the two. They're not precisely the same, but there certainly is carryover. So as a preface then, we need to talk about what the issue is in general in terms of use of electricity on Shabbos. What's the problem in general with manipulating the flow of electricity on Shabbos? Now, this is not a class about electricity on Shabbos. We could spend all 8 weeks on that topic. It would be a barrel of laughs, but that's not what we're doing tonight. So I'm doing this in brief. We're going to discuss three of the major views regarding use of electricity on Shabbos. Originally, thought I had one page here that I could circulate, but no, it's not there. Okay. That's life. Originally, when the issue of use of electricity on Shabbos first became a topic for discussion at the end of the... at the end of the 19th century, rabbis investigated what exactly is involved in electricity. They went to experts and said, train me, explain this to me. So we find, for example, the Maharsham discussing power generation, saying that he went to a craftsman, he went to somebody who operates a generator, and he asked him, what exactly do we do? And the first part of his tshuva, his responsum on the topic, discusses exactly what happens. He said they light a fire, they generate the electricity 24 hours in advance. The greater the number of users, the greater the fire they create to generate the electricity. He goes through a whole discussion about what they're doing. Rochaim Odzer, in his Achi Ezer, says, I went to an electrician, and he showed me the way a circuit works. He showed me that by turning this, then you join two wires, and goes through an entire description of what he saw with this expert. Nonetheless, some of the early writers clearly either were misinformed or just personally misunderstood what was involved in generating the electrical current. So that there's one who talks about the electricity being generated as a flame at the central site, meaning where the electricity is being generated, and when you use it, you're just tapping into energy that's waiting for you in the wires. That's one view that was presented. Another view that was presented is that electricity actually has all sorts of magical properties. So that the Maharsham actually reported that some scientist had told him that electricity can cause two people to be bonded together, and that if you manipulate the electrical current, you can cause people's secrets to be spilled. All sorts of interesting discussions about what electricity would do, simply because the information that was being passed along was not quite accurate. There's even a discussion about, can I trust the engineer to actually tell me the truth about what the electricity would do? But nonetheless, after those initial debates and after the initial explorations, the Chacham came to three basic points of view. One point of view is that the issue of generating current is called molid. And molid is something we discussed in our discussion about chemical reactions, generating heat through a chemical reaction, creating something new. Remember the Gemara in Beitza that we saw about creating fragrance in silks, right? They used to take a cup and they would fill it with some kind of fragrance-producing material and rub it along the material along the silk, and that would cause the silk to gain that aroma, to gain that fragrance. And the Beis Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmalka, said that the same thing is true. The same issue applies when you create a current. Just like I'm not allowed to create a fragrance in a garment on Shabbos, so too I'm not allowed to create current inside the wires. And so that was one view, that it was an issue of molding. Shlomo Zalman Orbach disagreed. He felt molid does not apply, and his reason was because it's only temporary, the current that's there. It's there and then it's gone. It's not something that you're creating that's going to remain. Nonetheless, that's one view, is that it's molid. Another view is that it's bonet. It's actually construction. Based on a Gemara in Shabbos, the Chazon Ish presents this view and says, you are building something by creating a functional circuit. That was his argument. Shlomo Zalman Orbach opposed that as well, and argued this isn't like creating something that's going to stand for a while. It's like opening and closing a door. We don't say that you're guilty of bona, of construction, every time you open and close a door. It's just not true. People open and close a door 1,000 times a day. That's not called construction. Then the third view that we'll mention briefly now is the issue of makeh b'patish. Makeh b'patish, also we discussed this as well, is literally hitting something with a hammer. And the Gemara talks about makeh b'patish in the sense of taking something and completing the process of constructing something. In other words, doing the last hammer blow, the last action that will make something usable. So when I close the circuit, I am making the circuit usable. That's makeh b'patish. The Chayei Adam applies it to winding a watch, for example. And so some apply that to closing a circuit. Others disagree, because you open and close a circuit 100 times a day. right? The you know, think about a light switch. You flip it on, you flip it off. So how can it be that you'll call that Makana Patish, the final hammer blow of constructing something? We're about to destroy it in a second. That, I constructed it in order to destroy it. That's not really an act of Makana Patish completing the construction. Also, Makana Patish usually is understood to refer to a craftsman's type of action. There's something sophisticated that's happening. Closing a circuit doesn't require any sophistication. Maybe it did 100 years ago, but it sure doesn't now. But those are the three central views that are presented regarding creating a circuit, or closing, I should say, a circuit. So now let me ask you. I know that we have two strikes against us here. Number one, the fact that the sheets aren't here. And number two, the fact that it's hot in here. So work with me here to make sure that we make it through. We mentioned three different issues regarding creating a circuit and closing a circuit, right? We had molid, bonet construction, and makana patish. How many of those could apply in the case of not completing a circuit, but manipulating the flow of current within the existing circuit? Will molid apply? Let's work the other way. We'll do the easy ones first. Will bonet apply construction? No, it's already built. I'm not doing anything to the circuit. The circuit's already there. Will makana patish apply? No. I'm not making it useful. It's already useful. The only thing left is molid. So will molid apply if I adjust the current? And the answer is no. It's a Gemara in Beitza, that same discussion that we had about the silks. The Gemara in Beitza distinguishes between creating scent, creating a fragrance in an entity, and increasing the fragrance that an entity produces. The Gemara talks about picking up a clove and rubbing it between your fingers so that it will generate greater fragrance. And the Gemara says, that's not molid. Well, why isn't it molid? Because it was already producing fragrance. All you're doing is amplifying the smell. And he says, that's not a problem of molid. The Gemara says, that's not a problem of molid. The Magen Avraham, Rav Avraham Gambina, writing in the 17th century on the Shulchan Aruch, cites that as halacha. So does the Chayei Adam, for that matter. The Shulchan Aruch Harav, written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, required that the added smell be of the same variety as the existing smell. Then he said, it's not molded. In other words, you have an item, let's say my shirt had a certain fragrance already in it, and I was to apply something else that would give it a different fragrance. Could I argue I'm only increasing the existing fragrance? The answer is no. That doesn't work. If you're increasing the existing fragrance, he said, this is the Shulchan Aruch Rav position, if you're increasing the existing fragrance by adding a different one, that's really a brand new act of molid. That's not comparable to the case where it already has one smell and I amplified the same smell. But the point for us is that either way, whether you adopt the Shulchan Aruch Rav's position or not, molid is not going to apply to increasing the flow of electrical current. You're increasing the same thing that's already there. Electricity is already there going through the wires, right? All you're doing is raising the flow of electricity, potentially. When you pass in front of it, if you're dealing with a hearing aid case, when you speak into it, the most you're going to be doing, if you change the flow at all, is just manipulating an existing flow. And in fact, as you said, this applies to hearing aids as well. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa of Rabbi Shua Neuwirth as permitting not only for somebody to use a hearing aid, but to adjust a hearing aid. You have somebody who has an adjustable hearing aid, and they walk into the room and they find that it's too loud, they're getting feedback. So Shlomo Zalman said, no problem, you're allowed to adjust the volume on the hearing aid on Shabbos. Molid is not going to be a function, is not going to be a factor. Speaking into it, not a factor. 100% permitted. That's issue number one. As far as the discussion of our bionic eye and this camera, there's no issue in terms of adjusting it so that I can walk around with it, I can use it, I can even, if there's some kind of a setting on it, I can increase the strength or decrease the strength, so long as it's on before Shabbos begins. Clear so far? Yes.
So for that matter, it's based on the same. have a flashlight which is on before Shabbos.
So that's why we get into that. That's why the laws of electricity on Shabbos are a little more complex, because when you're dealing with the with issues of electricity, we have to ask not only about electricity itself, but also its application. In the case you describe, if it's a flashlight with an incandescent bulb, we have a whole different problem: the filament in the bulb, because the rule regarding the filament in the bulb having nothing to do with electricity goes back to the Rambam statement that when I heat up metal to the point where it glows, I have violated Havara. So what if it's fluorescent? So there's something to discuss. And here I get to kick it over to Rabbi Tau. But the that's an issue that there's more of an issue to discuss, as potentially you could potentially make that argument, yes. The compact fluorescence. Right, so then you may have reason to be able to suggest that that's permitted. You have to also look at the technology a little bit, see whether there's any sparking that occurs when you increase it. First of all, actually, you know what? I don't think you can use a dimmer on those. No. They have the new ones you can use a dimmer? The old ones didn't work with a dimmer. He's saying there may be some new ones that can. So we need to find out. Yeah, this is a Metzius question. It's a question of what are we talking about, not a question of what the law is. You have to know more about the way an air conditioner works than I do. I know the way it works. I turn it on and the room cools off. But there are a few steps in between, I think, I'm missing. If I understood what goes on with the Freon, I might understand also why they keep telling me that my system is out of Freon. But again, not knowing enough about how it works in the heat exchange system, I couldn't say. But maybe that'll be a topic for another week. You know, can someone just open the door in the back? Maybe that'll help a little bit, give us a little air circulation. Thank you very much. Yeah. It'll also give us noise circulation, but that'll help keep people awake. Thank you. Okay. So that's our first issue, is the electrical issue. Question?
Well, the hearing aid does. A number of practical issues that show when some people show up and the battery is run out.
It starts to squeak. Yeah. Well, the beeping issue actually is a separate discussion we're going to get to. There is the beeping issue raises a new question, which again I hope we'll get to. I can tell you to look at page 3 on your sheets, and you know, lots of luck. But we're going to get to that discussion about using something which generates a public apparent desecration of Shabbos. And now the question will be, if someone hears that, will he realize, this was set before Shabbos? That's really that's really the question that needs to be resolved. But I'll tell you what, remind me when we get to that discussion about what I'll call Avsha Milsa, having great publicity to something, and that's where we'll discuss the beeping hearing aid.
So if I told you the hearing aid,
the right. Right. This takes you into the microphone discussion. It's true. So we're going to come back to the microphone discussion as well. The microphone discussion will figure into this too. That I think we're going to get to next week, but we will, God willing, get to it. So the second issue to address is the question of writing. Am I writing when I send this message, this image, to the retina? Now, the easy answer is no. And we can just move on to part 3. But I want to take some time on it. The reason the easy answer is no is because the technology we're describing is not sending a picture. It's sending, you know, so to speak, dots and dashes. It's sending binary code. It's not sending a picture. It's not as though if you were to open up the person's head and look on the chip, you would see a picture of something. There's nothing being drawn. There's nothing being written. There's nothing being inscribed. Nothing of the sort. So, in that sense, this isn't relevant. But I want to take a few minutes to discuss why it's not relevant, even if it were a picture, because this is relevant to the related technology of the surveillance camera. Right? What if I have, like you have here, this camera out, if you take the exit that runs by the entrance to the mikvah, also by the kitchen, that area, you see there's a camera that's out there on the bay where trucks drive in. Right? I think that's what goes on out there. You can see images of what's going on outside. So there's a camera in operation. It's conveying an image to that screen. Is there anything wrong with that? It was left on, I remember, it was left on over Yontif. So if I were to walk around outside, would that now be a problem? So the first, the Rambam says explicitly that writing doesn't just mean writing letters. Even though people's classic impression of writing is shtei osios, where you write down two letters, and that's from the Mishkan, where in the Mishkan they used letters for construction purposes. They, what they did was, each board in the walls that surrounded the Mishkan had another board that it was supposed to be, that was supposed to be its partner board. The idea was that the board that was in the northeast corner would always be in the northeast corner. The board that was in the southwest corner would always be in the southwest corner. And this was for reasons of Kedusha, of holiness, because of the principle of Malin Bekodesh Ve'in Moridin. You go up in sanctity, you never decrease in sanctity. So if I were to take a board that was right near the Kodesh Kedushim, the Holy of Holies, and shift it to another part, then I would be reducing the Kedusha of that board. There's a similar rule, interestingly, that has to do with the talis. Right? You ever notice the Atara on your talis? In, you know, we have the Atara, literally crown, but the little area of silk or silver, whatever it is, depending on the person's minhag. But the why do we have an Atara on a talis at all? What's it doing there? Yeah, tell you what's up and what's down. This end up is the purpose of the Atara. The idea is that when you look at it, if you use it, you make sure it's always on the outside and it's always on the upper part, the part by your neck, then you will always keep the same tzitzis in each corner. The front right will be the front right, the front left will be the front left, and so on. Why? Because if you were to shift the tzitzis to different corners, they would have a problem of, again, decreasing the kedusha, because there's a separate sanctity associated with being on the right, with being in front, and the like. So when it comes to the boards, they made sure that the boards would always retain their positions. And so, they would inscribe letters on each board, and you knew the one with this letter has to be aligned with the one with the same letter. So two letters are considered meaningful, therefore writing two letters is a violation of Shabbos. However, the Rambam rules in Hilchos Shabbos is Parakid Aleph Halacha Yud Zayin. You'll see it, God willing, when you have the papers. And the Rambam rules that that making a picture counts as writing as well. So does that mean then that I have a problem keeping my surveillance camera on? And the answer is not necessarily. Rav Moshe Feinstein ruled that one who is passing in front of a camera, I'm not talking about the person who owns the camera, but one who is passing in front of a camera need not be concerned. He can be lenient. Why? Well, first of all, he says, because it's not an image that lasts. Right? The image is there and then it's gone. And since it doesn't last, it automatically is shunted down to being a derabbanan, to being a rabbinic prohibition instead of a biblical prohibition. That's number one. Number two, Rav Moshe added that it's actually entirely permitted because it's what we call a psik reshe delo ichbas lei. Well, that's a mouthful. Psik reshe delo ichbas lei. What in the world do we mean? So we have to go back to a Mishnah in Beitza. The Mishnah discusses dragging furniture on Shabbos over a dirt floor. And asks, am I allowed to do that? The problem is, potentially I make a groove in the ground, and that's a violation of Shabbos. So am I allowed to? The Mishnah has a debate on that score. Not where you know for sure it's going to make a groove, but where you're not sure it might make a groove. So are you allowed to drag the furniture? The Gemara in Shabbos notes that even the view that permits dragging the furniture would prohibit it if the groove were a guaranteed result. And the Shulchan Aruch rules that way. So if I know that by dragging the furniture, I am going to create a groove in the ground, even though I don't want to create a groove in the ground, I like my dirt floor the way it was, nonetheless, I'm not allowed to drag the furniture on Shabbos. The guaranteed result is called a psik resha. Psik resha is short for a longer, more colorful phrase having nothing to do with furniture. Psik resha velo yamus is the full phrase, and it has to do with a poor chicken. The apparently, children at some point in the past did not have Game Boys. They did not have Nintendo DX. They didn't have all the fancy modern toys that you have. And so, instead, they like to play with heads of chickens. I think there might have been a step or two in between, like Lego or something, between chicken heads and Nintendo. But but essentially, you go back a couple of thousand years, entertainment was scarce on Shabbos. So the question was, would you be allowed to cut off the head of a chicken for the kid to have a toy? And the answer is no, surprisingly. The answer is no. Why? Because it's going to make the chicken's going to die. To which I'll say, well, I didn't want the chicken to die. I would have been very happy if the chicken continued to live. Yeah, but psik reshe v'lo yamas, can you cut off its head without it dying? It doesn't work that way, at least not yet. Maybe next week we'll discuss that kind of technology, keeping the chicken alive. But at least in the current state of technology, the chicken is dead when you cut off its head. So there we say, if the result is guaranteed, this breaking of Shabbos, this chilul Shabbos result is guaranteed to happen, then you're not allowed to engage in the activity on Shabbos. Even though you don't want that result, it doesn't make a difference. So I'm not allowed to cut the head off the chicken because it's going to result in killing the chicken. The neshama is prohibited on Shabbos. I'm not allowed to kill on Shabbos. So too, I'm not allowed to drag the furniture because it's going to make a groove. However, we distinguish between two different kinds of psik resha. I'm glad the air conditioning is kicking in because this is getting a little complex, but we can make it through. We distinguish between psik resha de nichole and psik resha de lav nichole. We distinguish between a psik resha that you're happy with, one that you say, oh, I'm glad that happened, and psik resha de lo nichole, one where you're not happy that happened. And within the category of lo nichole, we include what's called the lo ichbasle, a psik resha that you don't care about at all. You see, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that talks about a case in which I do something in somebody else's field. I end up improving somebody else's field as a psik resha result of my actions. And the Gemara there says, I'm not liable if it's in somebody else's field, because I have no interest in improving his field. And so the Gemara says we are lenient where it's a psik resha de lo ichbasle. I am lenient even though the breaking of Shabbos is a guaranteed result of my actions, if I don't want or even am just not interested in that final result. So go back to our chicken case. If I don't want the chicken to die, if I'm not interested in having the chicken die, according to this, I am allowed to cut off the head of the chicken. It's only where the end result is something that is actually a positive. And that's the view of the Bir Halacha, quoting Tosfos on this point. Tosfos himself quotes the Aruch as saying so. The Rosh says so as well. Others disagree about whether you can say this, whether it's unique to Shabbos or not, but that's not relevant for our discussion right now. So, applying this to our discussion, right? Walking in front of the camera is going to generate this picture. That's a given. It's only a derabbanan because the picture is temporary. But it's a guaranteed result. Well, it's a guaranteed result. That means I shouldn't be allowed to do this on Shabbos. It's a psik resha. Yeah, but it's a psik resha de lo nichole, or at least lo ichbasle. I don't care about the image on the camera. I walk in front of somebody's security camera. Do I care? Well, either I'm committing a crime, in which case it's really lo nichole. I don't want to be on camera. Or I'm just walking by in the street. I'm completely innocent, in which case lo ichbasle. I don't care about my image being on the camera. They discussed the question of what about when the technology first came out and stores used to post a camera in front of their window with a screen so that people could see themselves. And people would, like a five-year-old does the first time he discovers that this works, right? People would actually stand in front and say, look, I'm on camera, right? So then it's not lo nichole, and then it's not lo ichbasle. But nowadays, I think we're pretty much immune to that. We're harder to face. So we're not so impressed by being on camera anymore, and therefore, it's really a psik resha that I'm not interested in, and therefore I, again, should be allowed to walk in front of the camera on Shabbos without a problem. So, for example, I go down to the Kotel, and there's somebody, somebody shooting a video. It doesn't bother me. It's not an issue for me. Because I didn't want to be videotaped. I had no interest in being recorded. Yes?
You cannot get a key.
It's a good question, but I'm going to hold that. Because I'm still working my way through this before I'm going to get to a magnetic key. It's a good question, though. Maybe we'll discuss it. And I haven't yet worked on the last 4 weeks of this, so we could be able to discuss it in the last 4 weeks. There are enough other issues that relate to that, Amir Lakum and the like, that I want to hold that as a separate point. So Rav Moshe has given us two reasons already to be lenient. Reason number one is that it's not a permanent picture. Reason number two is that I'm not interested in this happening. And then there's a third reason for leniency. Even if you'll tell me, psik resha d'lo nichale is not allowed on Shabbos. Nonetheless, that view is only if it's a biblically prohibited action that's taking place. We already said this is a derabbanan. This is rabbinic, the Me'iri, as well as the Trumas Hadeshen, say that if you're dealing with a derabbanan, this isn't an issue at all. That's another reason to be lenient. Yes. If you're walking in the street and a light goes on, would you call it a derabbanan? Is it an incandescent or is it a fluorescent? If it's incandescent, then I think you could be dealing with a derabbanan. Now, not necessarily. The reason I say not necessarily is because I saw an article by Rabbi J. David Bleich who researched the technology involved, and he argued that there's a time delay from the time it senses you to the time where it actually is going to be triggered. And the reason for that is because they don't want to have it triggered by, you know, a rabbit or a raccoon or something like that. So there's actually a time delay. It wants to see that there's for a period of time where it's picking up a signal. So because of that, that may make this only a more indirect, more of a grumma, and therefore a derabbanan for that reason. That actually is a topic I was thinking about including. So we may really come back to that in depth, but there's certainly room to be lenient, even though it's a d'oraisa. Even though the use of the incandescent may be a d'oraisa, nonetheless, there may be room to be lenient as a overall derabbanan. Yes?
Why does the integration of all these for the video camera, it's only the person who's being filmed that's the integration of all these
right.
So this person who has to sing in his eye,
correct. We're not dealing. That's why I preface by saying we're dealing with the person walking in front of it, not the person wielding the camera. The person wielding the camera has no violation in terms of this. He hasn't made a picture. His problem is a different problem. His problem may be a problem of lifnei iver. If there's a problem for people walking in front of it, he's causing them to stumble. But he hasn't actually made a picture.
Because he's passive.
He's passive. Yeah. He hasn't made a picture. But there's another reason to be lenient regarding this, both the bionic eye and the case of the surveillance camera, and that is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach points out writing via a fleeting signal may not be called writing at all for halachic purposes. Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman. This, I did not find this in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos article. I actually found Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth quoted in an article by Rabbi J. David Bleich in Traditions. I don't know where this comment was made. But he quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman as arguing regarding a television picture that it's not considered to be writing at all. Because our definitions of writing are imposing one material on another, right, like ink on a piece of paper, rearranging an existing substance to form letters, words, or etching into a substance. In the case of the screen, where you're causing pixels to light up momentarily and then they go out and then new pixels light up, and that's not writing. It doesn't fit at all the definition of writing. And that will certainly be all the more true when you go back to our discussion about the bionic eye, where you're not creating a picture at all. You're simply sending fleeting signals to receivers. So to review what we've done here so far, we reviewed four different versions, I guess, really three. The army one, the military one was just for entertainment purposes. But we reviewed three different types of bionic eyes. One is the camera mounted on the glasses. The second one is the synthetic retina. And the third are the quantum dots to provide illumination to help the eye. And we said we're going to look at four issues. One is the use of what is essentially a digital video camera on Shabbos. And we looked through that. Oh, that was bad. I'm sorry. That wasn't intentional. We reviewed that. We learned it. Now we looked through it. And we said that if it's left on before Shabbos, you're dealing only with an issue of increasing the flow of current. Issues like bonet building or makabah patish, completing construction of something, are irrelevant. The only issue is molid zerem, creating a flow of current. And we said that since you're only increasing an existing flow, and it's the same type of flow that was there before, that's going to be permitted on Shabbos. We dealt then with the second of our four issues, and that's causing the images to imprint on the retina's receiver. And we said that's not going to be a problem either. Number one, you're not even though the Rambam says that creating a picture on Shabbos is called writing, it isn't just about writing letters. Nonetheless, number one, here you're not making a picture at all, you're just sending a signal. Number two, it will be a derabbanan, because this image that you create is not a durable, enduring image. Number three, it's a psik reishe delo ichbasle. It's a psik reishe. It's a guaranteed result of walking in front of it, but you're not interested anyway in generating that picture. And then number four, it may not be writing at all, because it doesn't involve any of the classic modes of writing. I was actually thinking as I said this, I have to correct one point. It's good that I reviewed it, because I have to catch that. I assumed that we're dealing with the video camera that's in the store, or the surveillance camera, and you don't want to be seen. However, there are cases where you do want to be seen. Take the bionic camera, for the bionic eye, for example. Right? I want him to see me. I'm talking to somebody, right? I want him to be able to see me. That's why we record this on video. We don't just have an audio recording. So it actually is not lo ichbasle. I certainly do care. So in that sense, maybe you have to take that out. Or similarly, someone has a security camera on his house. The Kol Eretz Chemda in Israel published a svarim of their response of their tshuvos called Mamara Habazak. They dealt with this question. Someone has a security camera in front of his house because he's afraid of people coming by whose intentions are not positive. And so he leaves that on, even on Shabbos. I get to his house. I want him to open the door for me. I want him to see that it's me. I'm going to stand right in front of the camera so that he can see that it's me. So then you have to take out the argument about lo ichbasle. Now it's a psik resha del nichole. Right? Now it's nichole. It's very nichole. It's exactly what I want. So then you could argue that it will be a problem. Nonetheless, we can still fall back on Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's point that writing on a screen like that is not called writing. It doesn't involve any of the modes that we recognize normally as writing. That still leaves us with two more issues. One is the issue of what we call zilusa de Shabbos, possibly dishonoring Shabbos, and we'll talk more next week, God willing, about what that means, and that'll take us back to the hearing aid question and the beeping when the battery goes. And also we'll deal, hopefully, with the question of carrying this camera and wearing the glasses outside of an eruv. So God willing, we'll do that next week. Hopefully we'll have the sheets as well, and that way you'll be as clear as possible. Thank you very much.